You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
When I say the hungry should have food, I speak for many. When I say no one should have seven homes, while some don't have any, though I may find myself stranded in some strange place with naught but a vapid stare, I remember the world and I know we are everywhere. Say the time for the rich, it will come. Let me count the ways, victories or hints of the future. Havana, Caracas, Chiapas, Buenos Aires. How many people are wanting and waiting and fighting for their share? They hide in their ivory towers, but we are everywhere. Religions and prisons and races, borders and nations, FBI agents and congressmen, and corporate radio stations. They try to keep us apart, but we find each other, and the rulers are always aware that they're a tiny minority, and we are everywhere. With every bomb that they drop, every home they destroy, every land they invade, comes a new generation from under the rubble saying, we are not afraid. They will pretend we are few, but with each child that a billion mothers bear, comes the next demonstration that we are everywhere. We are everywhere.
That was David Rovix and his song We Are Everywhere. And now for the conclusion of our interview with Jasmine Ristoff.
So Canada has signed a free trade agreement with Colombia, which is a country that continues to have a very wide and severe magnitude of human rights violations. But even looking at Colombia and the role it's playing within the region, not only what's happening inside Colombia, but looking at what Colombia represents for the entire region, is that Colombia represents a base for U.S. imperialism, a base from which U.S. capitalist interests can ensure that they will be protected and that they will continue to advance. And just to remember some of the things that Colombia has done in the past, and this is the country with which Canada has signed a free trade agreement, is that there's so many things, right? But one of the first things is that Colombia violated the territorial and political sovereignty of Ecuador by invading the country and launching an aerial bombing and land attack in which there were not only guerrillas who died, but also civilians died and others were injured. That happened in March 2008. Colombia is also a country which has been exporting, of course not officially, it has been nevertheless exporting paramilitary groups to Honduras to repress the local population that's mobilizing against the coup that took place last summer in 2009, to also protect the interests of local large landowners, and also to facilitate the exporting of illegal drugs from Honduras, because Honduras is a major point through which drug trafficking passes by from Colombia through Honduras and then on to the U.S. So the paramilitary groups are very useful for all of these purposes in Honduras. Also the DAS, which is the state intelligence agency in Colombia, has led undercover missions in Ecuador, in Venezuela, and in Cuba. It has been linked to opposition groups in Venezuela who are trying to destabilize the government. And also there has been the creation of paramilitary groups inside Venezuela, which have links to paramilitary groups in Colombia. So these are all of the things that Colombia has been involved in outside of its own borders, right? So we shouldn't think of Colombia as, you know, just a third world poor country which U.S. is doing with it whatever it pleases and it's just subjected to imperialism. No, it's important to recognize that in Colombia there's a very strong, powerful local capitalist class which has interests, and if it has the U.S. there, it's because the U.S. supports the maintenance of this political economic model that benefits this local upper class at the expense of millions of people who are living in misery, who are not having proper health care, proper sanitation, who are homeless, and so on. So it's important always to recognize these two forces. On one hand, it's foreign imperialist forces, or some people don't like the word imperialism, but fine, they're foreign capitalist forces that are trying to use the country's resources, labor force, and markets, okay? This is what I mean when I use the term imperialism, and I know some people don't like it, so that's why I'm defining what I exactly mean by that. So it's that on one hand, these foreign forces, U.S., Canada, and on the other hand, it's the local capitalist class in Colombia. And what now Colombia has become is officially a base for the U.S. monitoring and military intervention operations in Latin America. And this is who Canada has signed the free trade agreement with.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the connection, because as you point out in your book, by exoticizing the violence, by looking at it as an individual flaw, you know, that it happens because some people have bad characters, rather than seeing the systemic racism, the systemic structure that enables these policies to be put in place, we ignore the bigger picture, right? In Canada right now, we're hosting the G20, and, yes. You know, I wonder if you could comment on the relationship between the G20 meeting, this meeting that is an exclusive meeting where no one else is allowed. You know, why G20? Why the kind of security investments that are made, billions of dollars are being spent creating a safe place for this world elite to meet and decide how they're going to, you know, maintain or propagate their neoliberal agenda?
Well, that's also a very interesting question. We can see how with globalization, of course, different regions of the world are connected, and, you know, we can never look at what's going on in one part of the world without considering that the underlying processes are also connected to elsewhere or are coming from elsewhere. And the G20, one of the interesting things that I don't know if people have thought about it or it hasn't been talked about that much, but the protests that we now see are the evidence of it, is that the G20 originally was created with the objective of being more inclusive, right? With the idea that developing countries also need to have a voice in processes and decision-making that would impact the economic well-being of their countries, right? So they don't want to be just the object of these decisions, but they want to be active agents in participating in that decision-making. But developing countries are not egalitarian societies. They're unequal societies. So always the governments and the heads of states in these societies are representing the interests not of the majority of the population, but the interests of those with economic and political power. The fusion between the state and the elite has been, in Latin America, I can say, a permanent feature of these societies. In other developing countries, I also know that it's very much true. What ends up happening then is that even if these G20 leaders are present and take some, you know, role in the decision-making about international measures and so on that would affect their economies, they're actually thinking about the interests of their dominant classes and not the poor people on the ground. And so this is why we're seeing these protests, because the protests are actually coming from grassroots organizations. The protests are coming from those who are excluded. And as you said, so much money is being spent to exactly ensure that the public, the majority of people who will be the ones to suffer the consequences of these decisions, are totally excluded from the process of decision making. I'm just wondering, why can't these G20 leaders dedicate time and space for all these grassroots organizations to come and present their points, to present their concerns, to present their demands and ideas for alternatives? How much better this kind of an arrangement would be, right? To actually include the representatives of the people, because these organizations that are now participating in the protests are the representatives of the people being affected. And they have very good ideas, and many of them have concrete suggestions of what should be done, because this is the creativity of the people. You can never underestimate the intelligence and the creativity of people who are poor, who are suffering the consequences of injustices. They have very creative, very good ideas. But nobody wants to hear those ideas. Instead, these people are humiliated and they're restricted to, you know, a march on the streets only, where the leaders cannot hear them. And on top of that, to be subjected to all kinds of police repression and in some cases brutality. That's very humiliating, because the majority of the people who are out there are there with good ideas and good intentions, and yet they are humiliated. They're treated not as human beings with dignity that need to be heard. How much is it? $1 billion that was spent? Yeah, $1 billion on creating this very repressive arrangement in which the leaders are clearly separated from the public. And I ask, why? This is exactly the contrary to what democracy should be. And if all these people were protesting on the streets, it's because the leaders who are there obviously are not doing anything that is in the interest of the people. They're forgetting the concerns of the people. So clearly those leaders don't represent the people. So if the people are organizing, the people need to be heard if we believe that we live in a democratic society. But apparently this is not the case. And so here we have clearly the use of force, the use of militarism, which is so evident now, it's so obvious, we all see it on our TVs when they show, you know, the police in their riot gear. This is the clear manifestation of the use of force to repress dissent. To benefit who? To benefit the interests of few, and to ensure that the agenda of those few will continue uninterrupted.
And that's the point, right? So the question for us is, what do we do? What can we do to transform those systems? Looking at Latin America as an example, what would you hope people would draw from reading your book, and how do you hope that would motivate people to act?
Well, I hope that my book can be useful to a variety of people, of diverse groups of people. And I have actually heard from different people that they found it useful. For example, students, right? People who are just learning, or Colombian students who live in North America and they're not very much aware of what's happening in their country. They better understand what's happening there, right, after reading the book. Also, I've been contacted even by lawyers who are handling the cases of refugee claimants in Canada, and they've been telling me that the book has been useful to help them understand where do these refugee claimants come from, right? What are the local circumstances and so on. So that's exactly why I wrote the book. I want it to be useful to people, to anyone who wants to understand what's happening in Colombia, not in just for the sake of knowing things within Colombia, but also because the processes that are underway in Colombia are also processes that are underway in North America. Also because the links that connect North America and Colombia are numerous, such as free trade, such as migration, such as the products that we eat in our daily diet, right? The coffee, the bananas, the flowers we buy, and so on. So there are links. There are processes that are both present here and there. And also because Colombia, as I said, has very important role in South America, particularly because of its relationship with the United States and the possible implications that this has for the other neighboring countries that are trying to construct very different societies from the Colombian society and from North American societies. So that's why I see that what I've written about is not just a case study. It's not limited or confined to the land that is, bordered and is officially called Colombia. No, it's about processes that are underway here as well. And actually what I see is that the government here in Canada had learned from the government in Colombia how to use repressive force and how to militarize civil space, and how to disregard civil liberties. I almost feel as if there was a process of learning that took place. And because I see many similarities between what is happening right now during the G20 and what has been happening in Colombia for a while. So that's one thing. But then hopefully a different kind of learning can take place, and that's learning from the social forces that challenge these repressive states in the South, who, regardless of how poor and how much resources they lack, are still organizing and are still showing that, yes, things can be done differently, and they put their lives on the line, but they believe that it should be done.
An alternative is possible.
That alternative is possible, and that hope is there, and that sooner or later, you know, the people's power will win over a system which is based only on profits, a system that doesn't care about human well-being, about human health, about educating people, about helping everyone live with dignity. Not making everyone rich, but making sure that everyone lives with dignity. This kind of society will happen one day, and people who fight for it believe that it will happen, and they are in the process of moving towards it. So here in North America, it is these social movements that are expressing themselves right now during the G20. They're so loud, and that's great to know that they exist. And I think that every time more and more they can learn from the movements in the South and become present not only during forums like this or more engaged and more demanding of their government. So that's why I hope that, you know, not only the negative kind of learning can take place where the state here is just copying the repressive state in Colombia, but also this other empowering kind of learning can also take place.
Thank you so much for being with us. What you say is so salient to our lives today, because you're right. Latin America has been a laboratory for neoliberalism policies. We learn
exactly
from economists like Robin Hanel, Michael Albert, who speak about how this were introduced in Latin America and, you know, are later are perfected in Latin America. Places like Argentina, where the economy completely collapsed in 2001. You know, places like Chile, where Pinochet was, you know, the acts of terror that took place, I mean, are not unique to that area. But it seems that those are lessons in repression that governments or elites worldwide are taking note of. But I think, as you point out, we also can take note of the lessons of resistance, of the lessons of transformation that are taking place in places like Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, you know, the landless movements in Brazil, Colombia, the social mingas, right? There's a lot of other stories and a lot of other lessons to be learned from that region. So thank you so much. How can people access your book?
Oh, well, the book is available at major bookstores. And it also can be bought directly from the websites Between the Lines, which is the Canadian publisher. The book has two publishers, Ohio University Press in the United States. But for those who live in Canada, they can just go to Between the Lines. You can just put that in Google. It will take you to the website of the publisher, and from there you can order the book, and they will mail it to you. It's much more convenient, and I think it would be a better price if you buy it straight from the website.
Thank you again for being with us, Jasmine.
Thank you for inviting me, Sylvia. It was a pleasure to be able to share with you.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Jasmine Ristoff, the author of Blood and Capital.
¿Qué pasa, la bandita? Estamos en pleno reggae de Año Nuevo y no, y no escuchamos el teléfono, así que deja tu recado. Si traes un regalo, déjalo en la entrada de la casa con la telecam. Adiós.
Buenas tardes, le llamo de Telmex. Es un aviso de pago del recibo telefónico. Se venció el día 30 de diciembre. Su saldo vencido, $1,178. Solicitamos su pago lo antes posible. Gracias y ya se acabó el bebé.
Que pagar, oportunamente te lo hacen llegar. Y ya no rías, no disfrutes. Ponte serio cuando se habla de dinero, porque no hay tiempo y producir es lo primero. Huye, porque no hay tiempo y producir es lo primero. Escucha, se acabó el revés. Y es tiempo de pagar lo que uno debe.
¿Cuánto es?
Liri, liri, bam. Se acabó el revés. Y es tiempo de volverse un hombre decente.
No tengo dinero.
De regreso a la realidad. La rutina no debe parar. Ponte traje, uniforme de gris, se te ve conforme.
Como un pingüino.
Ya no pienses en opciones. Que no te engañen estos inconformes.
¿What?
Ya no pienses en opciones.
¿Qué?
Que no te engañen estos inconformes.
Boy. Oh, what a one with my people. Rhythm wise, yes I. Esto es todo sobre mí.
Yeah. Ni se te ocurre expresar tu sentir, porque de eso no se puede vivir. Haz algo bueno, dedícate a algo de provecho. No pierdas tiempo en tus sueños. Despierta y paga, para eso estás hecho. No pierdas tiempo en tus sueños. Despierta y paga, para eso estás hecho. Se acabó el revés. Y es tiempo de pagar lo que uno debe.
¿Cuánto es?
Se acabó el revés. Y es tiempo de volverse un hombre decente.
¿Aceptan cheques? Cada hombre y cada mujer vino en una misión, y es la de vivir la vida con una pasión. No hay que olvidar lo elemental, lo que es de corazón. Sinceridad con uno mismo para cada acción. Díganle al operador que ponga un buen dancehall. Llegó el momento de ponerse de pie.
Díganle al operador que ponga un buen reggae.
De tanto estrés me quiero liberar.
Ponga buena música que sea para bailar.
Doctor Mayal y los rastrillos venimos a cantar.
Compartiendo la música y buscando unidad.
So.
Cosas en la vida que no se pueden comprar. La vida necesita alegría para funcionar. Mejor le bailo y me relajo, antes que todo esto me haga reventar. Mejor le bailo y me relajo, antes que todo esto me haga reventar.
Creo que no, ya cortaron la luz.
No la apagamos.
Anda, qué harto.
It's Over. That is the incredible music and lyrics of Rastrillos. And the song is titled Se Acabó el Reggae. The party's over. And they're talking about this idea that, you know, don't spend time dreaming. You know, your job is to be a worker. Your job is to toil and struggle day and night. Forget about, you know, these ideals of, you know, dreaming and playing music and enjoying life. That's not for us. But I think that life is so much more. And I think life really is inspired by our own activism, by our own animation, how we participate, how we see the world impacts how we act upon the world.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.